My name is Stephanie Rieger, and this is a session on women and success. Should we adopt the male model? I was talking to my husband about the title of this, and he volunteered to be the male model and come in and pose for us. Obviously, the first thing we have to figure out is what we mean by the male model, and I think there are two ways we can take that phrase. The first way might be in terms of lifestyle, and I want you to flesh this out a bit for me. What do we mean in terms of the male model of success in combining work and family and lifestyle in general? And the second meaning of the male model and success might be more specific and look at management styles, men at work. What's the male model of success at work? So let's start with a more general topic and then get more focused and talk about what we mean by the male model in general. And I thought we would start out by having you generate a list of what you think of when you think of success in terms of combining work, family, patterns of lifestyles, etc.
I think of the freedom to determine one's own schedule.
That sounds wonderful. See my eyes light up? Okay, I'll take that one. Another thing that comes to your mind when you think of success, etc.
Good income.
Okay. The dollar sign.
Job security.
Okay.
I think job satisfaction.
Enjoy it and be energized by it.
Uh-huh.
And others are there only in body and wish they were somewhere else. And I guess I think it would be great to be able to be concentrated or obsessed.
Okay, to be totally there and concentrated and concentrating only on work. There's a wonderful example that Ingrid and I were talking before the session about what we should all do in the session. While we were talking, I was ironing, I was taking care of my kid with one hand, and I was helping my family get packed. So, concentrating on work. Unfortunately, you may be seeing some of the repercussions of that. I'm not real energetic today.
But the dominant thing Steffi was doing was dictating notes to me about what we should do this morning.
So there we were, concentrating on work, having to do six things at once. I've always wanted to do a study of what things people do while they're on the telephone. Because every person I know, I mean, I'll limit this only to women because I've only asked it of women. Every woman I know does at least six different things while she's on the telephone. She cooks, maybe she sews, maybe she takes care of a kid or two. I see head nodding. I'd like to know if you men also do that. The style of having to keep four different balls in the air is something that I think people are used to. I don't know if that's what you were thinking of, or were you thinking of really being engrossed in your work?
Engrossed in your work, okay. Where you're not worrying that you should be somewhere else, or mm-hmm. should be home taking care of your kids.
Okay, I'm going to put a fancy term up here that we social scientists use for that. We talk a lot about role conflict. A role is a pattern of behavior of somebody who's doing a particular set of things, like the role of mother or the role of secretary or whatever. If you have two roles that are making conflicting demands on you at the same time, like you have to be at work and you have a sick child, or you have a big presentation to do in 20 minutes and your family has to clean the house, or you have to clean the house or whatever, you're in a situation of role conflict. So no wrong role conflict might be something that we think of as part of the male model. Of course, we're going to have to question men and see for them too. Okay, more things that come to your mind when you think of?
A happy family.
Okay. And when you think of the traditional, is that what you think of when you think of success? The male model success?
I've read that there's no success if you don't have a happy family.
Okay. That's a good point. Let's get into that in more detail. I'll put something up here that I think of when I think of the male model, and that is that I think of spending long, long hours when you're in your 20s really devoting yourself to your work. If you want to be successful in the traditional male pattern of success, when you're in your 20s and your 30s, you put a lot of time in at work. So I'll put a lot of time at work, and you have this support system, if you're lucky, that takes care of a lot of the what I call maintenance work that I think of every day as I drive home from work. I work, both my husband and I work full time, and as I drive home, I recite to myself something that I read maybe 15 years ago. I don't remember who wrote it. I'd love to give her credit because it's one of the most powerful pieces I've ever read. It's called Why I Want a Wife. I want somebody to have a hot meal sitting on the table for me when I get home, and I want somebody to do the dishes when dinner is done, and I want somebody to take my clothes to the dry cleaners, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay?
Judy Seifert.
Good. Judy Seifert wrote it. Thank you, Ingrid. Okay. So a lot of time at work combined with a support system at home. And there's another thing that I think of as part of the male model, which is that work and your career comes first. Career is primary. Your family is something that you fit in as best you can around your career. It's important to you, but it's something that you fit in around your career. And you work pretty much straight for 40 years and then you retire, or 50 years or whatever, and then you retire. Although the idea of the single career person who has a steady work history, works all the time, doesn't take a year or two off, and then retires at the end of that. That's what I think of as part of the male model. Are there any other things we should put up here?
I was getting ready to put having lots of free time to pursue outside interests.
Uh-huh. That might conflict with my notion, so good, that's fine. What kind of work do you do? Can I get a job doing it?
One where I had to devote many, many hours in my 20s, uh-huh, working to a point where I could get a position where I could have lots of free time.
Okay. The reason I think in your 20s is important is because, again, in a traditional pattern, it's in your 20s when you have little kids. Now, I'm a person who doesn't follow any of these things, so I don't know how many other people really do, or if I'm just sharing my prejudices here. We'll have to talk about that. But little kids take up huge amounts of time. And if daddy's at work a lot and really mentally concentrating on work and doing the things he needs to succeed, then there has to be somebody else taking care of the kids. So that's what I think of as the male pattern of success. Are there other things we should add?
I think males, particularly in science, think that they're successful if they're objective and dispassionate.
Oh, good. Okay. So that's getting onto the style at work. What do we mean when we say objective? Anybody?
What do we mean? The good side of it would be fair.
Okay.
Not take it personally.
Okay.
But also approaching things on a rational level, not an emotional level.
Don't let your feelings
not emotional.
You remove yourself a bit from the situation.
Compassionate. Remove. How is it?
Using observations to make the decision.
Using observations as opposed to intuition, say, to make a decision. Are there things that we mean by objective? Somebody else said fair. Okay. Any other things you need to add for the male model?
Well, one that I've really thought a lot about is the way that decisions are made, I guess, not consensus decisions, or that decisions are made by a boss, usually, or decisions made and carried out rather than processed to death.
I know. Well, I'm coming out of a community that operates by consensus and you never get anything decided, so I realize there's a great deal of value to that.
I think the male stereotype is decisive, aggressive, ambitious.
Okay, decisive, aggressive.
Yeah, maybe decisive decision making.
Much better than indecisive decision making.
But not necessarily objective.
Right. Or dispassionate. We could spend our whole hour combining all those words. Maybe I should have asked you what the personality characteristics are of the male model. That seems to be getting Now we have a lot of these things up here. Do we want women to follow these? And I'll tell you some of the background of my thinking of why this topic came up. There are two things that stand out in my mind, and these are simply impressions. Whenever I go to downtown Chicago, which is the big city that I live near, I see hordes of young women, and they're all dressed very nicely in expensive suits with blouses with high collars and little bows, and they all wear running shoes, and they have briefcases, and they are very intent on where they're going. And there are armies of them all over big cities. And I think to myself, is that what we want to grow up and be? Now, of course, these women are younger than me, but I still say to myself, do I want to grow up and be one of those people who's very intent, objective? I wouldn't say dispassionate, because they are passionately right on, right up there, etc. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. The second thing that comes to my mind that makes me think about this topic is that there used to be stories in the newspaper about women who were succeeding in corporations, and there'd be a story about so-and-so who's the president of a company, and there'd be pictures of her in her beautifully decorated living room, and she was sort of the model of success. And now, in the last 6 months or so, I have seen lots of stories about those same women, but in the first set of pictures, they were in their beautifully decorated office. Now they're in their beautifully decorated home, they're all getting close to 40, they're having babies, and they're deciding to quit work and go home. And the stories are written as if these women are somehow a failure because they're not following. The implication is, if they were really going to be successful, they wouldn't have quit. But of course we think it's all right. I mean, the tone of the story is they're really being courageous.
It's the cell phone.
Thank you. By choosing to stay home, but there's something not quite all American about it. Do you read those stories too? Do you understand what I'm talking about? And it makes me think that we all have in our minds a model of what we should be doing. And these women are choosing not to do it. And I think to myself, where are the stories about the men who quit and stay home? And there aren't stories about them, but maybe there ought to be. And are there men who quit and stay home? Do they have that option? And are we setting up new constraints for women. Is this good? Do we want women to grow up to be objective, dispassionate, removed? I mean, would you want, does that sound like a good person you'd like to know or whatever?
Yeah. That's what, you know, I read that book, The Games That Mother Never Taught You to Play, all about how you go about being like men in the business world and the corporation. When I was done with it, I said, I don't want to have anything to do with that. I don't want to get involved in games of any sort. And I go to these seminars all the time where this woman says, you know, you've got to, you can't avoid it, you've got to be involved in the games. And I just, oh, no, I don't want to. And another thing is that they've been doing that, what you were talking about, the stories, a lot about women lawyers, mm-hmm. how they're all quitting and saying, the heck with this. And they did a study in the bar, some of the women in the bar did a study and found that just as many men lawyers were quitting, but there were no stories about them.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen lots of stories about men. I see it on TV magazines, men and women who, after like Ron Ford or whatever, have been quite successful and saved a lot of money, and they open up a little inn or shop in Tahiti, because that's what they've always wanted to do. Instead of the rat race, they become successful. And there have been stories like that about men for a long time.
The question for me is not just, is this a model that I would want to pursue, but is this a model I want men to pursue?
Good question. Some of the things we had up there sounded pretty positive.
Yeah? Did you hear that?
I think I read a real good book this last year called The Turning Point. Has anybody read that by Christian Kafka? And he compares all this to the yang and yin. And basically, when you look at objective, dispassionate, decisive, aggressive, ambitious, we have a real yang model of running the world. And I think, you know, we are so out of balance. When I'm involved in peace issue, and when I look at the, you know, the amount of weaponry and the objective, dispassionate way that people work in high-tech corporations and never have an intuitive or holistic look at anything, you know, they're just hoping, Honeywell hopes that the president's going to make a good decision, and they say, well, we're not involved in foreign policy. I think, you know, just to go on that, the other half of that is that the women I see who have made it to the top, Margaret Thatcher and Jean Kirkpatrick, I don't see them as the hope for humanity, because they are men in dresses, to me, in their attitude. What I think is we need 52% of the Congress be women with unique gifts of yin and yang being balanced out in our society. Whether that comes to men or women, I don't know. I mean, we all have it all in us. But the thing is that we are so totally into this yang that if women go into the work culture and then become yang, we're still in balance. What we need to do is find a way to bring a holistic balance of yin and yang. So we should have 52% of Congress be women, but women who say what women bring, which is unique, is what we need in the power structure. And that's, I'm discouraged by the women's movement, because it's just making more yang men who are running around doing the same yang things, and we're a culture that's raving here. That's my feeling.
I was with you up until you blamed the women's movement for it.
I don't blame the women's movement. Let me say something about that. When the civil rights movement, when the blacks began their move towards power, the first model was to become like whites.
Mm-hmm.
And the second model was to say there's something unique about being black, and that's what's really good. I think that's the question that's now being asked, hopefully, is that the early days was, let's burn the bras and be like men. And the second phase, I think, is, this is maybe wrong, but the second phase seems to me is much more of an introspective look that says, what is unique about us that needs to be contributed and integrated? And that's, to me, the in both movements, is the healthy part of the movement.
Do you have a response
there? Uh-huh. I think that that balance has to be within men, too, mm-hmm. Within individuals,
mm-hmm.
because I think a lot of men don't fit that pattern and are really struggling. Mm-hmm. I was reading The Cinderella Complex to my husband, and he said, I feel like that, too. I want somebody to rescue me and so I don't have to work all my life.
In that vein, there are nurturing, I think is frequently seen as a woman's role. And I know a number of men who are very good nurturers and some better than their wives.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they have to have some balancing, some thinking to do about what's typical and what's,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, what has helped them be free to be the nurturers of the family, but it's beginning to happen.
This is a question that gets debated a lot in psychology. Are there fundamental differences in personality and abilities between the sexes? If there are differences, are they somehow part of our genetic structure or hormonal structure or whatever, or are they created by the social structures in which we live? Those are really complicated questions. There are lots and lots of studies, and overall the findings is that men and women in general are more similar than they are different. The difference that holds up the most strongly is the difference in aggression, by which I mean a very narrow definition of aggression. I mean the kind of aggression that goes out and socks somebody else in the face. I don't mean in assertiveness or leadership. I mean whack aggression. And there are a lot of debates about where that's from and whether that's connected to the male hormone. We all have male and female hormones in our bodies, but we have different amounts of them. So the question is whether that's connected to higher levels of male hormone. The problem is that you can't necessarily find a very aggressive group of men and then test their hormone levels. It's very hard to do that, partly because the hormones break down very quickly once you get them out of the body, so it's difficult to do that kind of research. And there are lots of other explanations for those phenomena. But are men and women fundamentally different or not? Do we know women who are objective, dispassionate, removed? We probably do. Why do we think of that as a male style? I mean, I wonder if all those young women who are out there in their two-piece suits and their briefcases are buying into something that may be a myth, that maybe men don't want, and we're all sort of going around perpetuating this style of working when nobody's really very happy with it. Yeah?
Well, I was just going to say, I think that, I sometimes have problems with doing this whole male system, female system business,
mm-hmm.
and then comparing and contrasting.
Mm-hmm.
My sister and I have talked a lot about it. She's an engineer, and I was a scientist as an undergraduate.
Mm-hmm.
And finding, for example, that as we read, I was talking about this earlier, Ann Wilson Shafe's book, Women's Reality, that we fit more the male model.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like Carol Gilligan's book, for example, but I think there are those basic differences between men and women, but that this is just as restrictive to set up sort of two systems, a male system and a female system, and it's really hard for women, for example, I'll say for myself, when you're in meetings and everybody's saying, let's adopt more, I brought up the decision making, and that's probably been the most frustrating for me,
mm-hmm.
Let's adopt more feminine or female kind of decision making, where it's the process that it's important, let's use consensus. And you sit around for 3 hours and process uses a verb, it's interesting. And that's what's important, and then never sort of get to decisions. I don't think, maybe I'm just being defensive, because I have been one of those women in the two-piece suits with the briefcase, and I really kind of enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun. So I guess I think there is maybe, if we buy into this notion that there is a male system and a female system, that is going to keep women out of science and some of the more sort of objective areas, engineering, those kinds mm-hmm. of things, and it's going to make those women feel like they're not really interested. I mean, maybe they are the Jean Kirkpatricks of this world, the Margaret Thatcher's just in
mm-hmm.
Dresses, but that there is a positive in that too, and that maybe there's more variety amongst women and amongst men than there is between.
That could be. I think that's all true, but when I think about what I would have to do if I wanted to go work for IBM, I don't necessarily think, what I think of is the hours I would have to put in, the conflicts I would have with my family life, with being able to spend time with my family, take care of kids and things like that, and just focus on those kinds of things. I don't know whether we should call that male, maybe we should call that corporate America. Maybe that's it.
What do we know about what are the essentials for success? We've speculated about this.
Mm-hmm.
We have some fact. I mean, there are lots of studies, you know, you can read studies about people being hired if they're taller than somebody else, and all kinds of, you know, little this and that's about what determines who succeeds and who doesn't, appearance, lots of things. Is that the list we think we have in front of us here now? These are the essentials for success.
Is there something that you think that's not on here that we should put
is it,
in?
Well, I think there's a mixture here. What we would like to have in a job, what we would consider personally to be things that we would like to have if we were successful.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that that's really a list of what is required for success.
I think, first of all, we have to talk about success where, because you need different characteristics for success. Maybe as a scientist, where you work alone largely, although a lot of scientists now don't necessarily work alone. Then you do as success as the manager of some large corporation where what you're doing is dealing with people a lot. The irony I come up with is that in organizational psychology circles, what I do is hold training workshops on leadership for men in which I encourage them to be intuitive, involved, sensitive to the feelings of their subordinates, etc. And I say to myself, am I teaching these men a female style? Is that, and it's not just me, this is what a lot of the literature on how to be a successful manager tells you. Listen to your employees, share power with them, get them involved in the decision-making process, etc. And then on the other hand, I work with women in assertiveness training. I said this the other day, maybe some of you have heard it already. And I say to them, figure out what you want and be able to say it clearly, etc. And it, see, maybe it's sort of the idea that we both need a little more, what the other gender seems to have a lot of, or what we think the other gender seems to have a lot of.
I guess the conversation was just seeming to get a little slippery to me, or too ill-defined, because we're talking about, do we really want to do the things it takes to be successful without having really defined what those things are very carefully?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're sort of lost in the middle, going both ways at the same time.
There's not a set of characteristics that have been, that researchers have found. The one thing that's come up very clearly is what's known as the contingency theory of leadership. People don't study success, they study leadership. Success is a little too value-laden for social scientists to study, so they call it leadership. It used to be thought that there was one set of personality characteristics that made up a good leader. We need somebody who's intelligent and assertive and all those good things. And as I just said, people found that leadership in different situations, the leadership style that's required can vary tremendously. So the current thinking is what's called contingency theories of leadership. Contingency just means it depends on the situation. A certain leadership style is required depending on whether it's a situation where you're working with people of fairly equal skill, who all can participate, or you are the most knowledgeable person and everybody else should follow your direction. So it, you can get very different definitions of success.
It sounds to me that the contingency approach is the one that you need to take to success. I mean, she just talked about the liking being in a tutu suit and the little bow and carrying the briefcase. It seems to me that a lot of
people...
I didn't
say I like the bow.
Get a great deal of satisfaction and find it a lot of fun to be involved in making decisions on a board or you know, going through legal briefs or things that would be repulsive to me. But other people, you know, would get more joy out of being a tour guide. It seems to me that success is a contingency thing. And, it's not male or female. In fact, you're in trouble when you start talking about a model, because I don't think we should set up a model and say, I'm going to be successful if I live up to that model. I think we should say, I want to do what I want to do. I want to have joy in life doing it, and that's what I'm going to do. And that involves wearing a three-piece suit for me to be happy, then that's what I have to do.
But you need to, you need to know what you're supposed to do. I mean, that was the problem I had so much, is how am I supposed to act? What am I supposed to do to be successful? And I couldn't find anybody who, I mean, it wasn't well enough defined for me to say, well, here's how I have to act. Or, so I was just in a sea of, you know, imagining how I must act.
So maybe when we imagine, we all imagine things that are much more constrained than we really need to be. I don't know.
Well, you imagine according to a model that you see.
Mm-hmm.
And the model has been a model predominantly, I think, by men in that business or profession, whatever it is, and that becomes the only model we know. And it doesn't mean that a woman in that position needs to act that way, or because there are differences in personalities too. But and that's been our model that's been more difficult, I think. You know.
Mm-hmm. You were going to make a comment too?
Yeah, I'm thinking about my own career and life and work. Something continually has been occurring to me today, which is you figure out how to do your job and do it well, whatever job you have. And I've gotten better at figuring out how to do that over the years, including how to dress so that I'm sending the right messages to people I'm working with about my confidence or my efficiency or my warmth or my attractiveness or whatever. It changes how I dress depending on what I'm doing at work that day. And including efficiency and being on top of my work and getting it done well. And my success at work is really getting it done well. And I feel real good when I take on a big project and do it well. And I think as I get older, I'm better at kind of scoping out what is needed in a job to plan ahead to do a job well. So in that sense, I feel real successful at work. And that's a very good feeling. But what I hear from other women and what I experience myself to some degree, although I work in a pretty wonderful place, so it isn't so true, is that I can be very successful at my work, and I can plan well, and I can do well, and I can scope out the right clothes to wear on the right day, and I can have my, and I can plan ahead, and the secretarial parts of it are under control well in advance, and I can know the right information to get the job done. But I feel like sometimes it's written in water that success for women is sometimes not written in stone the same way it is for men. It doesn't add up. It doesn't amount to anything. It isn't real in some way. Even if you do real well, and at the time everyone says, oh boy, you handled that well. Yeah, that was terrific. But somehow it's written on water and it disappears again. And then the next time a hard job comes, and I've heard this from many women, they're still assumed to be incompetent. It's like it didn't really matter that they did it well. It didn't amount to anything. I wonder if other women have that feeling at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just kind of before you're thinking, I think the issue has something to do with the fact that women's typical experience hasn't been well articulated and hasn't been labeled as success. So it's like we've had a kind of experience that has more to do with being collective, being more intuitive, being more concerned about connectedness, being more concerned about meaning and things for people, the subject of meaning and things for people. And that those are things that haven't been written about very much or articulated very much, and we haven't labeled those as successful.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have a salient model that really fits our experience.
But I guess I'm saying even if we're successful in the same job as men sometimes do, and maybe we've done it better, you know, we've come out of it with our coworkers feeling less abused by us because we planned ahead and we were concerned with their feelings and we did the right kinds of leadership at the right times. But still, when the next promotion comes along or when the next position comes along that really takes leadership, we're not thought of because we're women somehow. It's like the fact that we're doing the job real well doesn't quite add up to as much as if a man did the job really well.
I'd like to throw in a thought that kind of moves on a completely different tack, but I've just been listening to all this and thinking about how it compares to our morning study of Mark and the contrast between thinking the things of God and thinking the things of men. And how Jesus was trying to promote the rule of God, which was a completely different lifestyle, and turning everybody's values upside down. And whether the male-female, you know, how the male-female relates to the whole thing of whether we're trying to do the things that God wants us to do, or whether we're thinking in men's terms of success, of if that means money, if that means position, if that means what that means, and how that relates to the discussion we're having right now.
I think there's some of that in reality. I've been listening to the talk this morning, and it seems that much of it is addressed to how do I feel, how do people feel who work with me. One might say, one would be callous, who cares? The only thing that counts is how many books got published. What does the balance sheet look like at the end of the year? How many cases did you win? How many clients have been attracted to the firm? That's not a matter of feeling, that's something that you can count, weigh, measure, put a value on. Get the job done, that's success. Now, if you mean success by how do I feel and does my wife appreciate it when I come home, or do the kids like me, that's something else. That's a style of living. Please understand me, I'm not subscribing to this theory necessarily. I'm trying to differentiate between what I think corporate America regards as being successful. I remember a man that was here a number of years ago who pointed out that his company, the 11 executive officers, were expected to spend at least 5 out of 7 weeks away from, 5 out of 7 nights away from home. They all, with the exception of one, had been through at least one marriage, failed marriage, and that was simply corporate life. What it means. If you want to be promoted, Ingrid, get Jody and the kids. Let's get a product.
But I've got a product. I do well at my work.
Maybe the definition, and I think male model, if we're thinking work, the two-piece suit, then it seems to me we've entered another realm.
Does it feel because it sounds like because you're a woman you feel more pressure to continually prove yourself that if you were a man and you were good at your work, you just assumed to be good at your work, but because you're a woman you feel the pressure to continually prove yourself, whereas why can't you just accepted as good and go.
There is some research on women and men at work, and women have the notion that if they do a good job, they will be promoted. Maybe this comes out of, I think this is mentioned in the games women play book, I'm not sure the title of the book. But it's also mentioned in a book I mentioned earlier, Men and Women of the Corporation by Rosabeth Moss Cantor. Women think that if they do a good job, that is sufficient, right? You work hard in school, you get A's. You work hard at the corporation, you do the work well, you'll get tenure or become an associate or whatever. When, in fact, getting all those things, you need to do more. First of all, you need to learn how to publicize the fact that you're doing these things well. This is a little different from what you're saying. As you're saying, people do recognize that you do something well and then it seems to evaporate. But a lot of women have trouble making their successes known. They think of that as bragging, and that's not something women should do. But that's one of the things you need to do if you want to be successful in corporate America. And you also need to develop good relationships with people higher in the corporation who know your work and can have the power to promote you. A lot of times people talk about networking as if you get promoted only because you're friends with people, and I'm not saying that. I'm saying people in power who know your work well. And women sometimes have trouble developing those relationships too,
And that's for complicated reasons. Usually those people in power are men, although not always. And lots of times they have difficulty developing mentoring. That's another one of those words where little dust's going to fly down and give me $25. Mentoring relationships with women. Partly because our model, again, I'm talking about models, for male-female relationships are sexual-social models. So sometimes men are uncomfortable mentoring women, younger women, because other people might look at that relationship funny and wonder if something's going on, or they might feel uncomfortable, or whatever. So it might be difficult for women to find men at the top who are willing to mentor them. Even if the men are the most well-intentioned men, it can be difficult. They can get teasing for that or whatever. Those kinds of things seem to be necessary in order to succeed in corporations.
I'm sitting here thinking that my experience with men at work is very similar. I think our successes are written on the water, too. To a large degree. In fact, there's an old saying in corporations that says, don't tell me what you did yesterday, and don't tell me what you did today, tell me what you're going to do tomorrow. That's an old, you know, you see that sign on the walls. But some of the publicized things that I think of, baseball coaches who won the World Series who 2 years later are fired, football coaches the same way, pastors who could do a wonderful job for 8 years and fall into trouble with the congregation within 2 months of maybe going through some kind of personal problem where their work falls.
Yeah.
I've been in the ministry, and I know for a long time that whether, you know, my Easter thing, which was great this year, has no bearing right now in terms of how my congregation is looking at me. I have very little backlog. If things start to go bad, it can go bad real fast. And I think some of that's a myth. But I do think that more promotions that I've seen in the church, and that's where I've worked, and offers that I've gotten have come from who I know and who likes me than from any work I've ever done. I can't, you know, I think people have an impression of me. And the district president likes me, I get good calls.
Let me raise another example and see if men find this to be true also. I have heard from women over and over again the example of women sitting in a meeting with mostly men. A woman will make a comment and it sort of disappears into thin air. A few minutes later, a man will make the same comment and everybody sort of perks up. At least I have two vehement agreeers in the back of the room. You've had that experience. Tell us about it.
If they could be in the church, they would probably be in the church.
Uh-huh.
And just in a group, a committee, and I think they can hear what people are saying, and I think lots of that stuff is not well. I think, you know, it's going to be a good solution. Sit it out. Well, maybe too soon in the process of thinking, and then about 15 minutes later, a man will say the same thing. And then it picks up on. When I said it, was as if I was not there. It's not as bad as it used to be. But it's still there. But just kind of aside, I had an interesting experience when I went to the National ALC Convention. And essentially, there were kind of three categories of responses from men. It was either you did not exist, I didn't exist, I was a woman, I didn't exist, I didn't belong there. It was, or patronizing, always made nice that you hear. Or just as, you know, I'm a person, you're a person, and who are you?
Mm-hmm.
And it was generally people of my age, men of my age and younger, who were the I'm a person, you're a person, who are you? And you're generally older men that you're a person. It's not to be, you know, there.
I work in an organization where we have two female architects in the office. And we can sit down in a meeting and discuss the siting of a certain building. And one of the female architects can have a put forth an idea and kind of roundtable discussion, and then something else happens. And finally, one of the men in the office will bring up the same thing. For some reason, that you know, that passes, that becomes the decision. I kind of think that they don't listen. I mean, we've got an enlightened office, that's great, but not that enlightened.
You and then you
I've noticed quite a difference in the responses to things that I have to say, depending upon the size of the group. Now, this could be me, because I'm much more comfortable on a one-to-one or two or three group experience. And I tend to be more quiet in a large group. I'm amazed at speaking out here. Holden, it must be a golden spirit or something.
Golden experience.
Yeah. But I can remember a couple situations where I've had some professional comments to make to men that were working with me. And I was pleased that they were well received, especially on a small basis. Like, he and I were talking, and by golly, he liked that idea, and it went. And I was pleased. I felt respected. But I sense the same situation when a group gets larger. I don't know if men are strutting around showing their peacock wings or what when they get in the presence of other men. It baffles me, because as I said, I'm very comfortable when I'm speaking to a one-on-one situation, two or three people, mm-hmm. and get it bigger, and I get lost. It could be me, because as I said, I don't like big parties where everybody's dancing. I find one person to talk to and maybe dance with. Well, I'm not afraid of dancing, but I'm more comfortable in a smaller situation in general. So I don't know if that speaks for other people having their ideas accepted, but I get the feeling that men are afraid to accept a woman's idea in the presence of other men.
Surely we can have to rile some of the men up. I keep saying you and then you.
Well, if that does happen, that does happen in a meeting, and you find that your idea is passed over and somebody else mentions it later, I think it's real important for you to say, just even if it's just for yourself, to say, that's exactly what I said, 10 minutes ago, and then add something to it. So at least the group realizes, oh yeah, that's why she did say that. And it's helpful to yourself. The other thing is that if you're in a group where that happens, it's important for you to say, that's exactly what Mary was saying, and you just added something to it. At least point that out, because it makes you feel better. And, it's important, I think, for women to support other women. You see that happening, and I think it's real important to point that out to the group.
I think sometimes, too, at least I found this very refreshing, and I hope nobody thinks it's too sarcastic, but a friend gave it to me a couple of years ago. In a society that's largely altered, this has meant a lot to me. Something I don't know to whom to give credit. Someone said there were really only three rules in life you need to follow to be successful. The first one is don't sweat the small stuff. The second rule is it's all small stuff. And the third rule is if you can't fight or flee, flow. And I really thought that was very refreshing as a perfectionist who thinks I should do a good job at everything and knows that I can't. To me, that was helpful. To feel successful.
Did we have another? Did you have any other?
It seems to me the problem is circular in this sense, that an idea has very little merit all by itself, no matter how good the idea is. The idea is useful if it's one that can be implemented. The implementation of an idea, no matter how good it is, depends upon someone having the muscle it takes to make it go. Therefore, I can sit in a meeting of 20 people and I can hear an idea expressed by a person who simply does not have the competence to move a group to make that happen. There's no implementation power there. Later, I can hear the same idea espoused by a person who has the competence. That means push, pull, anything else that it takes to make it happen. Now it's a very good idea. Not because the words, the idea have changed or the concept has changed, but because now we have the means of making it happen. And that, it seems to me, is a problem that women face, because frequently women are not seen as being in possession of the power, pull, prestige, whatever you want to call it, to make their ideas capture the audience to which they are talking, not because they do not conceptually have the right notion, but because they have not yet demonstrated that there is a probability that this could be worked out.
Yeah,
I say that's circular, and I mean that is a real fact.
Part of that phenomenon seems to me to be, too, the ability to articulate the idea. I've experienced the situation that you're talking about. When I was a woman, who made the first suggestion and was not listened to or didn't feel that made any impression. And then later on, someone in the group makes the same idea. And part of the problem that I sensed was that possibly I didn't articulate it well enough that, it caught on so that people really understood what I meant, or the discussion hadn't involved. You said that you thought of it in your mind for like 10 minutes maybe ahead of the group. So they didn't grasp on to what maybe happened or daydreaming anyway, it's all meaning.
No.
And later on, someone said the same thing, and maybe said it a little better, fleshed out a little more, or maybe just because of the discussion between it has been fleshed out a little more, and it doesn't really matter much if it's a man or a woman who makes the second or the first suggestion. It's just that by then, the group really understands it better and picks up on it.
Well, now you're getting me riled.
I've seen it
and heard it so many times that I know that it's there. And I wonder why you assume that the person who doesn't have the confidence was the word you used in the beginning, and
yeah.
Then you talked about having the power to, was the female. Maybe the person who brought up the idea the second time was equally at the same level of confidence or power.
My guess is it would be equally ignored.
Yeah, I would affirm that because I sit in meetings with my 45 partners, male and female, and if there is a younger partner, first-year partner who comes up with an idea, male or female, but that same idea is then later on picked up by a more senior partner, male or female, it's the more senior partner who's listened to rather than the younger partner, whether it's a question of power, who controls the economics of the firm or the client base, or whether it's a question of competency because that senior person has the ability to articulate it better or is seen as somebody that, yes, can pull off the idea.
We need to distinguish between competence and perception of competence.
Okay.
Letting him off the
hook. Yes, to train women to communicate with that sense of competence too. I mean, that's one of there's a great deal of sexism, and of course we, you know, that's the other key is to address that and to not, like you said, not let that stuff keep flying by. Because on the other hand, I'm like in the male model, so I'm more comfortable in large group meetings than in small group. All the typical male characteristics in many cases. But the other thing is, I mean, to help women make suggestions without apology, not sort of preface every remark with, now this is just probably just my opinion, I'm not really sure if any of you have had the same experience, and I'm not, you know, this might not make any sense to you, and so I just thought I'd, you know, float this idea out and just see what you think of it, and this is just my opinion, but I think, look, you know, to help women not do that whole prefacing, but to rather communicate with the same authority. And maybe it is just bullshit, you don't know, but to communicate a sense of competence. And then the other part is to work on society so that they can perceive the competence that is there in women to the same degree that it is with men, because we do go into meetings with blinders and tend to listen more to men. I know I do that too. We're trained to do that, so we need to overcome that. But to help women. And then another thing is that drives me crazy is so often in meetings, women who speak during minutes, you know, people have to speak, and you can't always just raise your hand, you have to jump in. I mean, there's certain techniques of how to communicate in meetings with authority and help women do so. Unless you're going to try to change the whole system, and that's the whole question. The women I say this to sometimes say, yeah, but that's you're buying into the male model, and you're learning to communicate in the male kind of authority. Rather, we should be, you know, changing the model. So then it's really hard to know.
Well, I find the confidence, I'm more confident as opposed to competence. And I think,
did you say?
The word I used was competence, and I meant power to bring it about. Things like, I think your word around here has been games. Now, I wouldn't dream on going to a point in a group without having done some work in the halls. And I want to know what I've got behind me when I walk in there, because if somebody disagrees with me, I want to be able to shoot them dead. Same thing.
Working the halls, is that a male model?
That's just plain old-fashioned organizing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's orange.
It sounds to me like we have really come up with some good things about power. I look at the topic today as being success. Is success and power then equal? Is that what we're saying? I think we've really drifted into how do I get power? Maybe that's what success is. I guess I'm sitting here with a much more metaphysical question, which is the reason that I started out with, because yin and yang, is that I still am at the place that, yes, you may be very powerful and you can lobby to get your Edward Teller and you're getting your Star Wars system through, and boy, you know, you've been successful, but are we being successful?
Now, I'll just say that's what she said.
That's the same question I always have when I go to assertiveness training, and I've gone to it a lot, and it hasn't been to me much good, but is that I look at what they're telling me, the pastor is telling me every Sunday, that I shouldn't be selfish, I shouldn't be saying, what do I want, how am I going to get it, and he's telling me to be more humble, and then how do I balance that with, you know, deciding what I want and going and getting it, you know, it's just, it doesn't point.
I want to strangle pastors like that who do that to me. I just get so mad. Yeah.
How do you be an aggressive servant?
That old chant, Mr. Keith, what do we want?
Peace!
What do we want?
We have about 2 more minutes, and I'd like to hear your reactions to the discussion today. We've covered a lot of topics, and I wonder where we are now.
I'm just struck by the last thing. I don't know how much of a summation this is that you're looking for, but. And is the male model of success Jesus Christ? And he wasn't a corporate president, so do we want to be like Jesus, or do we want to be like a corporate president? Or do you want to be successful? What is?
He was not successful in terms of the world. You know, he ended up at the end of the thing, dying on the cross, and the whole world thought he was not a success. And he was trying to put forth a different model for us to lead. So, do we want to equate success with power in the corporate world and some of these angles, or do we want to look at other models and the way of God as an alternative?
Mm-hmm. Another thing I think we're saying are we putting people in boxes by saying male, female? Is there some of each in all of us that should be recognized and affirmed for what it is? And then we can be different but not boxed.
Social scientists and researchers have to have something.
I'll go home and do whatever. What I think is interesting about this discussion, in part, is there's a real resistance to acknowledging differences. And there's a real questioning whether differences exist, but there's a real, I think, resistance to acknowledging that when women go into the workplace, something different happens to them than what happens to men. Some women, not all women. Some of that is because they bring some different things to the workplace, some of which we want to maintain and some of which we may not want to maintain, or they may not want to maintain. But somehow we're sort of floating above and around that issue, and I think that's an issue that really needs to be thought about, and maybe we touched on it when we got into the fact that women feel like they're not heard. There are lots of reasons for that. One reason is sexism, which is a reason that people are uncomfortable talking about and acknowledging. And I think, since I'm the leader of this discussion, and you've been very generous for the last hour letting me share my prejudices, I'm going to end the discussion on that note. Let you think about that over lunch. Thank you.